Chapter 10, Section 2, World War I. As you read, look for the reasons why the United States entered World War I, the ways in which Georgians contributed to the war effort, terms, isolationism, World War I, armistice, pandemic. During this period, the United States became a more important power in the world. The country underwent a change from its long-standing foreign policy of isolationism, not getting involved in other areas of the world, to a policy of expansion of trade and territory. The country's growing industrialization led to increased interaction with other countries. The United States needed overseas markets for its goods, raw materials for its factories, and naval bases for the growing U.S. fleet. By the 1880s and 1890s, the United States also entered a period of expansion, acquiring territory in other places. In the 20-year period from 1898 to 1918, the United States involved itself in two wars. In 1898, the United States became involved in the Spanish-American War over Cuba's independence. The United States acquired new territory in the treaty that ended that war. The establishment of military camps in the state set the stage for the role Georgia played in the next war. In 1917, after remaining neutral for 3 years, the United States entered World War I after continued violations against its shipping. Both of these wars affected Georgia, especially Georgia's economy. The Spanish-American War was brief, but the military bases it brought to Georgia provided a boost to the state's economy. These effects were even stronger when the United States became involved in World War I. Causes of World War I. In 1912, Woodrow Wilson, who had lived much of his boyhood in Augusta during the Civil War and Reconstruction, was elected President of the United States. As a very young boy, he had seen the horrors of war when wounded Confederate soldiers were brought to Augusta after battles in other parts of the state. Wilson's father, the Reverend Joseph Ruggles Wilson, allowed his church and churchyard to be used as a hospital. From his house across the street, Wilson could see these wounded and dying men. It left a permanent impression on him. During his presidency, Wilson had a number of foreign policy, international relations problems. On the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, rivalries between major European powers resulted in a world war. The European powers had a complicated set of alliances that would bring several countries into any conflict that might begin. One incident began such a conflict. On June 28, 1914, a Bosnian Serb terrorist assassinated the heir to the throne of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Archduke Franz Ferdinand. The terrorist belonged to a group that wanted to break away from Austria and become part of Serbia. The group was supported by Serbia, which was allied to Russia, which was allied to France and Great Britain. The Austro-Hungarian Empire was allied to Germany. When Austria declared war on Serbia in late July, Russia prepared to fight Austria. Germany then declared war on Russia and France. The fighting started when Germany launched a surprise attack on the neutral country of Belgium on its way to invading France. That action led Great Britain to declare war on Germany. Some other countries joined either the Allies, Great Britain, France, and Russia, or the Central Powers, Germany and the Austrian Empire. Thus began World War I, or the Great War. One of the first actions on the part of Great Britain and Germany was to try to cut off trade with the enemy. With its larger navy, Great Britain had the most effective blockade. American goods could not make it to Germany, but they could make it to Great Britain. The United States asked both sides to respect its neutrality. Even though the British blockade violated the neutral right to trade, the United States tolerated its action. Although Germany did not have as large a navy as Great Britain, Germany had an important asset, the submarine or U-boat. The U-boat changed naval strategy because it could sneak up on ships to attack them. The Germans began a policy of submarine warfare, warning other countries to stay clear of the waters near their enemies or risk attacks on their ships. The United States enters the war. Within days of the start of the war, President Woodrow Wilson made a major speech declaring that the United States would remain neutral. Almost all Americans supported that position. In fact, Wilson tried to get the warring sides to sit down with him and try to find a peaceful solution. They refused. In May 1915, a German U-boat sank the British passenger ship Lusitania, believing it was also carrying weapons. Among its dead were 128 Americans. Wilson protested vigorously to Germany, but still held out for neutrality. Georgians supported that continued neutrality. In 1916, the Germans attacked the French ship Sussex, which had Americans aboard. Wilson threatened to break off ties with Germany. In the Sussex Pledge that followed, Germany agreed not to attack merchant ships without warning. Meanwhile, in the ground war in Europe, both sides had dug into hundreds of miles of trenches, fighting battles that sometimes lasted for months. The numbers of casualties on both sides were horrific. Poison gas and machine guns made their appearance in this war and contributed to the high death toll. By the time the war was over, an estimated 20 million people had died. The world questioned just how civilized human beings had become. As fighting continued in Europe, some American politicians urged the president to prepare just in case the United States needed to fight. Wilson opposed this at first, but in 1916 he supported legislation to strengthen the Army and Navy. In 1916, as he ran for re-election, he continued to stress peace. He won by a narrow margin. In January 1917, Wilson called for the countries at war to make peace without victory. But victory was the goal of both sides because each hoped to gain territory and to weaken the other side. Germany decided to resume submarine attacks on all ships in January 1917. In response, President Wilson broke off relations with Germany and ordered that American merchant ships be armed. Peace demonstrations and rallies occurred throughout the country. Many American citizens still did not want to become involved in a foreign war. Much of the anti-war opinion changed in March. At that time, President Wilson gave the press a telegram that had been captured from the German Foreign Minister Arthur Zimmermann. It was addressed to the German ambassador to Mexico. The note proposed that Mexico become Germany's ally if the United States entered the war. Mexico could then get back the territory it had lost in its war with the United States in the 1840s. This possible threat to the United States convinced many people that Germany had to be stopped. In that same month, German U-boats also sank several American ships. On April 4, 1917, Woodrow Wilson asked Congress to declare war. He hoped that it would be a war to end all wars and make the world safe for democracy. Some still opposed the United States becoming involved, but many thought that it had become necessary. Georgia and World War I. Most Georgians became patriotic war supporters, although many opposed the draft that required young men to register and fight. They believed it was unconstitutional to require military service. Some landowners were particularly opposed to having their sharecroppers taken from them when cotton prices were finally increasing due to wartime demand. Some landowners did not tell African Americans about draft notices, hoping to keep them on the farms. Some African Americans were arrested for draft violations they did not even know they had committed. In their trial, the old populist Tom Watson defended two of the African Americans charged. The state benefited greatly from the many military camps established in the state, more than any other state. Men came from all over the country to train at the state's military posts. Georgia already had a few military installations, such as the Arsenal in Augusta, which was almost 100 years old by then. Camp Hancock in Augusta and Camp Wheeler in Macon trained National Guard units. Others trained medical personnel, transportation units, and engineers. Souther Field, near Americus, trained pilots in biplanes called Jennies, made by Curtis Aeroplane and Motor Company. Fort McPherson, below Atlanta, had become a permanent post in 1885. During the war, it served in many capacities, including holding prisoners of war and treating thousands of soldiers in its hospital. Another significant training camp was Camp Gordon in Chambly, which opened in July 1917. Camp Benning near Columbus also opened in 1917 to train infantry troops. The war was good for Georgia's economy. Cotton prices went up, helping Georgia's farmers and sharecroppers. Food crops were also in demand. Processing food became important, leading to the creation of businesses that canned foods. Georgians supported the war effort by buying Liberty Bonds to help finance the war. Many wanted to show their patriotism. For example, the African American business Pilgrim Health and Life Insurance Company bought Liberty Bonds. Its board minutes reflected their hope that helping fight for democracy abroad would help bring democracy at home. The Chinese American community of Augusta also bought bonds saying, "We too are Americans." Textile mills made cloth for uniforms and bandages. Railroads carried arms, ammunition, and soldiers to ports where ships waited to take them to Europe. Many town residents planted Liberty Gardens to raise their own food so there would be more food for the military. Women volunteered for the Red Cross. To conserve fuel, businesses closed on Mondays during the winter of 1917 to 1918. Citizens tried to do their part. The end of the war. Input of American soldiers and materials helped break the war's stalemate, deadlock, in Europe and brought victory to the Allies. By the time the United States entered the war, there was one less ally. Russia had pulled out of the war. Two revolutions occurred in that country in 1917. The second one was the Bolshevik or Communist Revolution. That change would be very important to U.S. history, especially after World War II. In January 1918, President Wilson issued his 14 points on which he hoped the treaty ending the war would be based. His goal was to create a more peaceful world by making changes that he thought would make future wars less likely. His 14th point called for the founding of an organization that included the world's nations, called the League of Nations. There, issues could be discussed and resolved, and collective action could be taken against those who became aggressive against others. On November 11, 1918, at 11 a.m., both sides signed an armistice, an agreement to stop fighting while coming to terms for a peace treaty. Negotiations for the treaty began at the Palace of Versailles, outside Paris, France. Unfortunately for Wilson's plan, the Allies were more concerned about weakening Germany and making it pay for war damages than in creating a new world. In the end, the Treaty of Versailles was a punishing treaty that made Germany admit guilt for causing the war and pay the Allies for damages. Germany also lost some of its former land, as did the Austrian Empire. The treaty created great sentiment in Germany. The seeds of World War II were planted at the end of World War I. President Wilson did manage to save his 14th point, and the League of Nations was founded in 1919. However, there was opposition to the treaty in the United States, and the Senate refused to ratify it. Thus, the United States did not participate in the new League of Nations. Without U.S. support, the organization did not have the strength it needed to prevent future problems. As the war ended with great devastation and loss of life in Europe, disease added to the problems the world already faced. In the winter of 1918, a deadly form of influenza called the Spanish flu broke out. In Georgia, the first cases were at Fort Screven near Savannah in September. It moved to Camp Hancock in Augusta and to Camp Gordon in Chambly by early October. At the time, there were no vaccines or treatments. The disease hit quickly, with many of its victims dying within hours. This horrible illness became a worldwide epidemic or pandemic. No area was safe, rural or urban. Especially hard hit were people from 20 to 40 years of age. The disease killed more people worldwide, some scholars think as many as 40 million, than did World War I. While Georgia had many victims, it was not as hard hit as some states. In the United States, over 650,000 Americans died before the epidemic ended, leaving the living to wonder when it might return. Like other Americans, Georgians wanted to return to a period of stability after the Great War. They mourned for their dead and built monuments to Georgia's doughboys, soldiers who had fought in foreign lands. Many returning soldiers, some who had never been far away from their farms before, had been changed by their experiences abroad. But they returned to the farms, factories, towns, and countryside to take up life as it had been before the war. African Americans and other minorities who hoped that their service and patriotism would be rewarded by more fairness at home were disappointed. They returned to their segregated lives. All Georgians wondered what the future would bring. Page 516, Georgia Portraits, Juliet Gordon Lowe. Born on Halloween in 1860, Juliet McGill Kinsey Gordon, Daisy to her family and friends, grew up a privileged Georgia girl in Savannah. Her grandfather, Gordon, was one of the founders of the Central of Georgia Railroad, and her mother's family had been early and prominent settlers of Chicago. Daisy was an adventurous child who rarely held back her opinions. When she was four, she met Union General O.O. Howard during Sherman's occupation of Savannah and commented on how he lost his arm. "Well, I shouldn't wonder if my papa did it. He has shot lots of Yankees." Daisy was educated in private boarding schools in New Jersey, Virginia, and New York. As a young woman, she traveled throughout the United States and Europe, where she loved introducing her European friends to such southern favorites as grits, sweet potatoes, and cucumber pickles. Throughout her young life, she had suffered from frequent ear infections. In 1885, her insistence on an untried treatment led to partial hearing loss in one ear. In 1886, Daisy married a British cotton heir, William Willie McKay Lowe. At the wedding festivities, a grain of rice lodged in her other ear, causing an infection that resulted in deafness in that ear. She was sometimes frustrated, but she never allowed her hearing loss to limit her in any way. Although the couple settled at the family home in Lafayette Square, they spent most of their time in England, where she made many friends in British society. Although she enjoyed her life of travel and leisure, all was not well in her marriage. In 1904, Willie left Daisy, much to the horror of Savannah society. Before the divorce was final, Willie died. During the next few years, Daisy traveled. She wrote, "I am just an idle woman of the world with no real work or duties." That, however, was about to change. In 1911, she met Lord Robert Baden-Powell, who had founded the British Boy Scouts. She began working with the Girl Guides, which was led by Baden-Powell's sister Agnes. Lowe set up a group at her Scotland estate and two troops in England. Daisy, who had been somewhat of a tomboy in her youth, enjoyed working with the girls. She found a new sense of direction and meaning in her life. She wanted the girls not only to learn new skills, but to acquire self-reliance and confidence. When she returned to Savannah, she phoned a friend and said, "Come right over. I've got something for the girls of Savannah and all America, and all the world, and we're going to start it tonight. On March 12, 1912, the first Girl Guide Patrol, or troop, was founded with her namesake and niece as its first member. The following year, the Guides became the Girl Scouts. Lo committed herself, her time and money, and her friends' money to helping young girls realize their potential. Through her efforts, the organization gained national and international recognition. She helped develop the Girl Scout Handbook, How Girls Can Help Their Country, and was instrumental in organizing the first World Girl Scout Camp in the United States in 1926. In 1927, Juliette Gordon Lowe died from cancer. She was buried in the scouting uniform of which she was so proud. In her pocket was a telegram from the head of Girl Scouts that said, "You are not only the first Girl Scout, you are the best Girl Scout of them all." Page 518, Chapter Review, Chapter Summary, Section 1, The Economy. Some Southern leaders, including Atlanta's Henry Grady, wanted a New South that included more business and industry. In spite of the New South ideas, Georgia's economy relied heavily on agriculture and on cotton in particular. During this period, pre-war industries rebuilt and became an important part of the economy. The textile industry brought in northern investors and offered job opportunities to many Georgians. Columbus became a center for the textile industry. New business developed, including Coca-Cola in Atlanta. Tourism grew during this period as Georgia's mild climate appealed to northerners. The Jekyll Island Club was one example. The expansion of the railroads was a major factor in the growth of towns. Atlanta, in particular, benefited from being a railroad hub. A number of insurance companies were based in Atlanta, including Life of Georgia and Atlanta Life Insurance Company, founded by Alonzo Herndon. Section 2, World War I. In 1914, the Archduke Franz Ferdinand of the Austro-Hungarian Empire was assassinated by a Bosnian Serb. This set off what came to be called World War I. The Allied powers were Great Britain, France, and Russia. The Central powers were Germany and the Austrian Empire. After several years of neutrality, the United States entered the war in 1917 on the side of the Allies. The war helped Georgia's economy. There were many training camps in the state, including the new Camp Gordon and Camp Benning. Cotton prices increased, and the demand for food crops also rose. World War I ended with the signing of an armistice on November 11, 1918. The resulting peace treaty sought to punish Germany for the damages caused by the war. President Woodrow Wilson issued his 14 points, which he hoped would make the world a more peaceful place. His 14th point did result in the establishment of the League of Nations, but the United States did not ratify the treaty. In the winter of 1918, a deadly influenza epidemic broke out, killing millions of people around the world. Page 519 contains a review of Chapter 20.